La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Of TritonCast, the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. Alongside Jenny Stevens, I'm Jeff Toriel.
In today's Triton Spotlight, we chat with men's volleyball alum Chase Frischman. The 2013 UC San Diego grad plays professionally on the AVP Beach Volleyball Tour after a stint playing indoors in Switzerland. He's also recently begun coaching, and the communications major has started a blog. How different is the sport of beach compared to indoor volleyball, and what's next for Chase? Our conversation with Chase Frischman comes your way shortly in this week's Triton Spotlight.
But first, we go around campus. Our Triton Tuesday series continues each week on UCSDTritons.com, where you can learn amazing facts about what makes this place so special. And games. We finally get to talk about games. The Big West Conference has announced its men's and women's basketball schedule for the 2020-21 season. See who the Tritons will be playing and when by checking out the site. And this week is Veterans Week at UC San Diego. The athletics department recognizes those who serve with new content daily all week long.
You definitely won't want to miss that. Coming up later in today's show, we'll connect with Dr. Ebony Williams in our campus spotlight. But first, it's on to this week's Triton Spotlight. Here's our conversation with UC San Diego men's volleyball alum, Chase Frischman.
Chase, tell us what it's been like playing on the AVP tour and kind of how you got there.
So how did I get there? That's an interesting, let's see if we'll give you the short or the long version of that.
We got time.
We'll go medium, somewhere between. I hopped overseas actually first, straight out of college after the 4 years at UCSD, popped over to Switzerland. I got a chance to play outside hitter over there. All those times that Ring, you know, wouldn't let me into the front row. He kept on leaving my squirrely ass in the back. I had to go over and get an opportunity to go swing at a couple balls over in Europe, which was cool. So I was over there for a year, and I actually was planning to re-up and go with the same team. There was a little bit of drama in the club, and what ended up feeling like a mini catastrophe of being like them, of me ending up going home the next year, of being kind of sad of that, turned into, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Am I going to use my degree, buckle up, and go career oriented, or am I going to continue to be wild and free and find a reason and excuse not to grow up? And that was my that was what started me in the beach volleyball stuff, to be honest. I was coaching still at the time and started to go towards it, and that's what I had played for a lot of years growing up. That was probably my first love and first thing that I was connected to as a kid growing up, watching the beach volleyball stuff. So, and there's not much of an indoor, obviously an indoor, there's only an indoor scene for the guys, for the club volleyball and for college. So with that being said, I switched over to the indoor and then kind of came back to it. I was like, okay, you know what? I could go, you know, I'll train for this. I'll see where it takes me. And actually it's funny, with partner Mike Brunsting was how it started, which is a UCSD alum that I played for 3 years there with, that we intersected, cross paths. He was our setter. He had been kind of playing for, maybe a couple more years than me, and actually had made a main draw and snuck into one with Paul Ariza. And so he was ahead of me in terms of the beach learning curve of like playing the game the way it's, I was more of just kind of a scrapper and had a big arm and could hit the ball hard and played really good defense. But he took me under his wing. We started playing together. And it was, once again, as I said, it wasn't like structured until it became, we started to have some success. And then it was like, we went from just kind of rolling the ball out and playing to be like, wait, do we really want to do this? Like, you want to run this? You want to run the show together? And so we ended up doing this thing. It was the AVP Next Circuit, which there are, I think there were like maybe 5 tournaments or something like that. And however, the highest amount of points in that circuit gets an automatic bid to the Manhattan Beach Open, which is the biggest one for the AVP stuff. So Mike and I decided after we kind of just walked into a win for the first one and just kind of played really well, just instant chemistry. We're like, do you want to roll with this? This is so fun. Let's do it. Let's try to win these things. And we had a couple of good battles in that and played some good teams and ended up winning that bid and then deciding let's lock it in for the whole year and go after it. And not until then was I really set on, oh, AVP or anything like that. It kind of honestly fell into my lap a little bit. And then once we started to enjoy the success, it was like, okay, let's lock in here.
You mentioned growing up playing beach. And then obviously at the collegiate level, the indoor option is the option. That's what there is. But the two games are vastly different, aren't they?
Incredibly different. And the fact that people still, you know what I mean? It should be considered a different sport in my eyes. It's obviously, you know, you can get better from playing either one. It's not that drastic. It's not like basketball and tennis, but it really is. There's the style of the game, and especially there's different things with timing and approach. And two man definitely takes a more well-rounded player, right? And not that there's not well-rounded players in the game of indoor, but you got to do it all. You got to do it all with the beach stuff.
Well, and so after UC San Diego, and we'll get into your time in La Jolla in a little bit, but for after sure. UC San Diego, you mentioned you went to Switzerland, you were there for a year, and then you transitioned back outdoor to beach. How did you latch on in Switzerland?
Switzerland, how did I latch on? Oh, how did that come about?
Yeah.
That situation. So came back, you know, my career at UCSD, I'm just laughing. I'm thinking about the fact that I was on, you know, I was on not academic probation, but I got into a little trouble when I was there from an early age. I was, let's just say I wasn't incredibly mature to handle the college experience and be alone and make wise decisions. And so we ran into a few of those kind of things. Sorry, that's just a little bypass there. But as I left college, still had a little bit of the squirreliness, a little bit of the wiggles to get out, you know, 21, moving back to Laguna Beach and having some fun with friends. And I completely forgot the question. Where are we going again? I know we're going. Guide me.
Going to Switzerland. How did you get there?
Switzerland. Awesome. So I'm at the beach, right? Laguna Beach, our little volleyball community. We're probably partying a few more days a week than we should. And just kind of enjoying life, going to the beach, living that, okay, I don't have responsibilities still, kind of that, you know, gap year to really strapping on the helmet and living a real life like some people do. And I was down there playing a tournament, and one of my buddies who actually had played 20 years prior in the same city, he goes, dude, you got to go out to Switzerland. It was the time of my life. It was incredible. You get to travel. And through his, you know, this is his quote, the women, the yada, yada, you know, what this older guy that's just trying to like live vicariously of like being like, you got to do it. The guy that's been married for whatever, how many years and has a couple kids. So I'm like, okay, yes, Ribby, let's go. Let's do it. Sounds great. This guy, Tom Ribrich, he's like literally like 2 days after we had that conversation, he's like, I got you a job. It's with the same team. You're going to love it out there. So it's kind of like, you know, the dream. I'm like, what? Really? Like, you know, thinking he was probably blowing smoke and ended up being a real thing. So he sent me out there and he actually told me, he's just like, I got you a job as an outside hitter, man. You'll be fine. I've seen you play on the beach. I'm like, dude, so I'm going to be the only foreigner on this team. Getting paid, only guy getting paid to play, everyone else. And we were trying to move from the B league to the A league, that's what they were intending was to pay. And they trusted him to find, you know, to be like, yeah, this guy's legit. And yeah, I'm legit on the beach and I could play the beach and I could pass a dang ball. But this is to go there and to be like their big hitter, like their big stick, their guy that's going to help bring them to the promised land. And it was by no means like, I don't know. It was just tough. That was tough to be able to go into that and be like, well, I'm a libero. I'm going to try to be outside and see what I can do here. So I had some tough times over there, growing pains of like thinking like, oh God, like they're paying me money right now to try to get them to the top. So there was a lot of pressure. That was a good growing up phase. We ended up doing it, but it was by the most circuitous route feeling ever. Like I filled a role for them and we had a good team and we made it happen.
And off the court, how did you adjust to living in Europe?
I loved living in Europe, but I was depressed. That's the truth. I loved some of the travel and some of the opportunities to go pop around, but it was just like, as you can imagine from a lot of my stories, was I ready to fully leave the nest? I didn't really fully leave the nest when I went to UCSD, to be honest. I was going back and forth every 2 or 3 weeks, popping to see family. So this is my first time really like having to try to cut that umbilical cord and do it on my own out there and all that. Like I think for the first couple months, I was pretty down, at least maybe 3 months. And like with the weather, I had never been in that kind of climate as well. It was cold and kind of dark. And I'd go to bed at weird hours. I'd watch TV shows, like whatever, on How I Met Your Mother on repeat and weird stuff. So it was tough. It was a tough, but by the end of it, obviously that's something that totally changes your life or reshapes you and forces you to go through the tough stuff. So it was cool.
And if I understood what you were saying correctly earlier, you were considering going back there the next year, right? But then the AVP opportunity came up. Was that accurate?
I was considering going back there. Yeah. By the end of it. The full expose was actually halfway through my trip there. I had gotten diagnosed. I had a seizure, and I was probably from stressors and different stuff like that. I had a seizure, got diagnosed with nocturnal epilepsy. So I was dealing with that out there, kind of on my own with some help from people there, but mostly just kind of on my own. As it went along, there were a lot of like those kind of ups, downs, lefts, rights of that experience. And by the end of it though, once we got to the, you know, where we wanted to go and actually moved up from the B league to the A league, we were, everything came together and I like recognized, like, oh, these guys actually like me. I had honestly built this thing in my head of like, God, these guys must hate me. I'm the only American. They treat me like crap. You know, no, but they were just having fun. And that was just my perspective. We ended up coming together by the end of it and being like, they're like, we want you as libero, yada, yada. And for this, they ended up deciding that at the top of club management, even though the head coach and a few others wanted to bring me back, that they were going to go a different way with libero. It's kind of hard to pay liberos. I don't know if you're familiar with that though. Liberos are typically kind of hometown kids on teams like that. Cause it's, you know, they're obviously going to spend money if they're in the A league on a guy that's 6'8" and that can hit a ball straight down. That's probably the best usage of their money.
That makes sense for sure. And going back to the AVP, you know, again, we talked about it being a different sport, really. So now it's 2-on-2 and you're playing in the sand. You know, what kind of mental adjustment is that?
Let's see, mental adjustment, 2-on-2 playing in the sand. Well, it was more freeing for me, you know, because having played libero for years and years and years and probably getting yelled at for missing a free ball pass. You know how it goes. It just over the course of it, it's like a very perfectionist pass defense, not really a lot to it other than that. And I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed perfecting those skills for sure. And being a part of that and helping the team dynamic in that regard. But it was an awesome transition because it allowed me to free up some skills that I knew that I had in the tank. And use my athleticism fully, like use the whole package. So it was actually it was mentally freeing in that regard for me.
2016, your rookie season, you had a great deal of success. What was that like? What do you remember about that year?
Let's see, what do I remember? I remember as we kind of left off there with Brunsting, I remember us having I just remember being motivated. I remember being incredibly motivated, fired up and kind of limitless. It was a good feeling. It was like every success was just new ground. It felt amazing. It was just awesome. And putting it all in there, I remember making significant life changes too as well. I was drinking a ton less. I was sober for in between tournaments, like every 2 weeks. I was really honing my craft. And so I just remembered it being like really empowering to see the positive, the holistic positive growth and seeing that actually apply on the court. So that was amazing. I'd say that year was phenomenal in that way.
You've mentioned Mike a couple of times. How do you find a good partner and what makes a good tandem in beach?
So that's, there's a lot of things, right? A lot of different directions. I've had a lot of different partners too, especially in the last few years when I've been more so kind of searching for that next level, which, you know, we'll probably talk more about. That ends up being, you got to look in the mirror and you got to figure your own stuff out, right? It's not about the partner. It's about being able to communicate what you need and what you want. So I'd say that's the most important thing, is to continue to shine the light inside and figure out, make sure you putting in the work to see what kind of a player you are and what you need, and be able to communicate that. Because if you leave things unsaid, that's gonna haunt any partnership. But I'd say good partnership. Like, I've had a bunch of good ones in different ways. Like, Mike and I just had this flow with this connection, this kind of cerebral connection, where all the long rallies, the way that I played the sport, and was just sand flying and diving and hustling and kind of fast touches, quick. It really helped my game to have a guy that was such a good setter and that could find my window. It was like, as an attacker on the beach, there's a level of typically, you know, the set is a little bit slower. It's not like indoor where your setter finds you almost. You know, you're kind of in rhythm, and if the set's not in the right spot, you just jump to the ball aggressive and be big on the beach. You go a little bit slower and you find the ball typically. That's kind of how it works. Obviously a spot in mind, but Mike was very good at, I was kind of a locomotive on the tracks and kind of running in early, and he did an amazing job of leaving it in front of me or else I was going to be in trouble. So that was a pretty cool tandem to help out, to have him be such a good setter indoor and be able to have that transfer right to the beach.
When you were getting started that year, did you surprise yourself with the competitive success that you had?
Oh yeah. Oh, totally. It was out of left field. And me and a few buddies had popped out. Like, the beach that I grew up at was actually an old school beach, and it still is old school, where it was big court lines. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. They changed that over, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that, where it went from the old school big court, where some of the little guys had a little bit more ability to have success, where it was more of a ball control game. And then they moved to the short court. And so I'd played all the way up until, like, I don't know, low 20s. And then people were like, dude, you got to get out of the bubble. Like, stop being big fish, small pond. And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Sounds great. We end up getting out of there, where we think we're, you know, doing well. We're like, wait, this is how you play beach volleyball? You know, like, people are hitting high line shots, which means over the top of blockers. We're only used to, like, just crushing the ball as hard as you can. Like, everything about it was so different to hop into that level. And that was, I don't know, 20, probably when we were like anywhere from 20 to 20, 21 to 23 was when I was playing in some of those, and we got humbled big time. So I'd say moving into it and then starting to have, like, oh wow, like, this is at a decently high level. That's what propelled, and kind of just the excitement was what, you know, unparalleled, to have that first feeling like that. You know, it's pretty cool.
You've got your own fan club, Legis Legion. How'd that come about?
How did that come about? Well, once again, in that little community, which I keep on just saying, the little community, our community is called Victoria Beach, which is in Laguna. And that's where I grew up. And everyone, very, very loving, supportive, family vibe down there. And so as anyone in that community has success, people rally around that. And since it was a volleyball community, it was something that was it was mutually shared interest. So they would follow to our qualifiers and follow to our tournaments. And they became kind of one of the rowdiest groups there those first couple of years. They even came to Austin, Texas, and they brought the whole crowd there. Some of our friends were from Austin. So we had like 8 or 10 of them crowded in somebody's grandma's house, right? Staying up till 2 a.m. bumping music and waking up at 7 to come cheer us on. And it was fun. That was at a stage of life where, like, everybody was still kind of at the back end of being able to have some, you know, freedom and fun. And now everybody is more so career path and moving ahead. So those are fond memories of that crew. That's kind of how it started.
That's really cool. Chase Frischman, our guest on TritonCast this week. Want to go back to your time in La Jolla. How did you end up at UC San Diego? What brought you here?
So story with UCSD. Let's see. I think I was, so junior year of high school was when Kevin Ring started to recruit me. And that's obviously a cool feeling. I'm kind of thinking back. I haven't thought about that feeling in a while. So just feeling into that, it was during a time, and it's so cool to see. It's so cool to see how far UCSD has come as a program. And last year, like, want to make a shout out to that team and to Coach Ring and Paul Warren and all those guys that invested a lot of energy and time into me. And just to see them have that taste of success last year is a pretty amazing thing to kind of witness that and see what we, and, you know, feeling like a part of that, of feeling like who we were when we kind of came in there, you know, went through some lumps, had some really good moments, had some bright spots. And now for them to continue that legacy on and have it actually start to grow is an amazing thing. Back then though, it wasn't a high level program as it is becoming today. So it was one where I was on the fence. I'm like, okay, well, I've got this, you know, in my back pocket. Is this a decision I'm going to make? I'd had another offer from like Pacific at the time, which isn't even a program anymore, and was on the fence of like, he was recruiting me very hard, and was, we didn't even have scholarship money at the time. So it was just book money. It was more so to get in the opportunity with the grades that I had, which were good, but not UCSD level, to get into a great academic school. So that was obviously weighed in the decision. So it was deciding between that to sign in the early signing period. I ended up signing in this early signing period, which at the time was a tough one for me. That was a tough decision because there were some other schools, in all honesty, there were some other D1 schools that I was intrigued in. There were the UCLAs, there was this, that, the other thing. And liberos don't get money early. It's kind of one of the last positions they fill. We're like, yeah, we're the beaten stepchild. Pardon me. That's very NPC, but, we don't get the money, until the end of the line. So when I made that decision, it felt like in some ways potentially cutting off what other offers could have come in, and that's the true honesty of it. But then in terms of going to the school and being able to play and having some of my best buddies of all time that now I still have connection with, and going to La Jolla and going to that school and getting that education, I am very grateful for that.
You mentioned that the team while you were there did not have the competitive success that they're enjoying now, and they certainly had this past year in 2020, but what are some of your favorite memories from on the court or even just school in general?
Let's see, favorite memories. Yeah, I remember, God, we had a run. We had a stretch in, I believe it was my junior year, and maybe it was senior, I don't know. But we had a stretch where we won 5 games in a row in the MPSF, and we were making some headway. And we were playing amazing, confident ball. We had just beat, I think we had beat Northridge, Long Beach, UCLA, like a lot of tough teams in a row. Granted, a few of them had some injuries, but we were playing really, really well. And I remember we had an ineligibility that just kind of sunk our ship, of a guy that was playing absolutely amazing. He was an opposite and was just, was probably the catalyst of that, the biggest catalyst of it, of having an arm like that, that was like a D1 quality. So I'd say that was an amazing moment where we just felt like I could feel the energy. It felt like a winning program, you know, in that moment, it felt pretty cool. I'd say that, let's see. Yeah. Just, and then the senior year, I just remember senior year coming into it, of just that motivation, the energy that we brought, of like kind of having been the underdog. I always have felt good as being the underdog. I love that. Love that energy. Love that. So like us as a team, I just remember us in a team meeting the start of the year and kind of feeling that leadership role and wanting to fill that and connecting with our guys and just holding that energy and that belief that we could make playoffs. We were always trying to make playoffs. That was the one thing. Like, we had, you know, we finished a couple games out of it pretty much every year, but that was our goal, and proud of how much we wanted it and the work we were willing to put into it. So I'd say that was a definite pride point.
You talk about some of the tough competition you had on the court. And I know that both of your parents went to UCLA and your father played there. What was it like competing against the Bruins?
Oh, I got a good story for this one. So the Bruins, so UCLA, that was definitely, that was, God, I remember my first year, speaking of my first year when I came on, Ring had had an agenda in a positive way to want to get me on the court, even as a freshman, and give me experience and yada, yada. And once again, I had this weird, I had kind of had a complex about getting out there and feeling like this other libero who was there at the time, Andrew Caban, who was more like buddies with the guys on the team, a lot of older guys on the team as well. So it's kind of one of the, I think I was the only freshman once again in that situation. And I just remember kind of being put in these positions to go excel and go have opportunity, but kind of being scared S-H-I-T-less and not really feeling like I was ready for that challenge. So I just remember playing at UCLA. I think I might've started that game against UCLA, and immediately, I don't even think we were in Poly Pavilion, but I'd grown up with my dad watching the Bruins play for their basketball teams, their football teams. That was kind of our sports fanship. So to be able to play in Poly was something that I always look forward to. Oh, that's going to be such a cool opportunity. And they were renovating it during that time. So the first year, Caban ended up playing, right? And he was a good libero and deserved to be in there. And it was one where I was just kind of shying away from that competition, to be honest. Then the next couple of years, was once again, it was renovated. So we weren't able to play in Poly. Finally, my senior year, I'm like, I'm so excited. I'm like, get a chance to play in Poly. This is it. This is my last opportunity. And one of my buddies, this guy, Dane Worley, who I'd played in club ball with, and we'd actually won in 18s, the 18s open championship in club. So it was kind of like seeing somebody across the net, a familiar face. It was fun to be able to play against him in that situation too. And this guy, I think 5 points into the match. I don't know if you're familiar with what a BIC is. It's a type of offensive play that it looks like they're going to set the middle, and it goes over the top of them to the guy in the back row who hits a pipe actually, or hits from the middle of the court in the back row. And it's supposed to deceive the defense. I was absolutely deceived. Thinking it was going to the middle and wasn't able to make my move to a deeper part of the court. And I got by this guy who hammers the ball. I got just drilled with a ball straight in the face. Like, it felt like it just took me completely off of my feet.
Oh man.
And knocked me back. So I think it was 5 to 10 points into my senior game at Poly Pavilion. I was knocked out I wasn't knocked out with a concussion, but I was bleeding and put aside on the bench and watching from the bench. So I just remember that. I had some buddies in the stands too that were yelling at me. Like, it was so classic. it was a fun moment. But that's what happened in terms of the legacy that my mom and dad left. That's pretty much all that I got to give to the Bruins faithful.
That's outstanding. And most importantly, glad you're okay. Your mother was a part of that club ski team. Did you grow up skiing at all?
I grew up skiing. I did with her, and I'd complain bitterly of the cold and say that I wanted to go home for a hot cocoa and just whine about it the whole time, pretty much. So that was my experience skiing. But I still can ski. I can ski pretty well, and I enjoy it. Now I enjoy it more.
Funny how that works, right?
Yeah, yep.
Going back to your time as a Triton, you graduated as the second all-time in digs as a libero at UC San Diego. Is that something you look back upon and you're proud of that?
Yes, I am proud of it. There's a couple of things that, like, I feel like I got an awesome opportunity to be able to play as much as I did, and that the results come. I need to be a little bit more like, okay, yeah, it is cool. It is cool to be second in the program in digs. I wish I had games to 30. Who was it, Eric Lesserman, dude? If we had games to 30, I would have been able to challenge you. That would have been fun to have an opportunity at that. I don't know the last libero. He probably would have passed me. I would be third right now, I believe, if he had a full season this year.
Right. Yeah. But when you graduated, you were second.
Yes, exactly. I don't know if he ended up passing. I'm just thinking into it. I'm feeling into it. I might have dodged a bullet there to hold on to my second spot, or I'd be at the back end of the podium.
How is as we move on to this pandemic that we're all trying to survive, how did that affect things with the tour? I'm guessing things shut down, right?
Yeah, that's actually, and that's kind of what chased me away to Arizona a little bit, was I think everybody in during this time has had to face some, you know, some challenges in one way or another. And for me, that was to be able to honestly pay my rent, considering the fact that we didn't have tournaments. We didn't have tournaments and we weren't, Trump wasn't giving me my money. I'm joking, but I'm serious. I was having difficulty in terms of being able to afford things. And I recognized that. I was just like, you know what? I am two or three tournaments from being pretty close to a cut line here, you know, in my summer, and kind of recognized and gave me more awareness to be like, I need to take a step back here, change some things in my life. You know, maybe a little later than some people are having these conclusions, because of the fact that I was able to kind of coast with the volleyball stuff and continue putting energy in that and receiving, you know, financial support out of it. But it was a cool inflection point. It was not to say it wasn't difficult, but I think I can feel into the situations that people have had, and some more, much more trying than me in terms of having to support families during this time. I think it's difficult. It's been a difficult time, but I'm grateful to kind of be, to have gotten this opportunity out here in Phoenix for a stable coaching job, which has been amazing, because obviously the beaches in California have been more regulated and it's been more difficult to make money as a coach out there. So it's cool. And for me, it's just a good time in my life to have some change and get away. And I've really blossomed from it, and I'm grateful.
We're going to continue on this coaching path, but I did have to tell you, Chase, that I looked it up and you're 4 digs ahead of Ryan Liu after his 2020 season was cut short.
Oh, geez. That's funny. Sorry, Ryan.
So now you're in Arizona and you're coaching. How did you get into that? I know that's something that it interested you for a while.
Coaching in Arizona. Yeah. So I've had this dream recently. It's like California. God, how lame to say, but how real it really is. It's like I've grown up in it. So I see it through a little bit of a different lens, right? It's like the ocean, the beach is amazing. It's wonderful, but there's also more to see in the world, right? So I've kind of had an idea of wanting to go travel more and go live in different areas and see how I like it, and to be able to balance that with continuing to stay in good shape, continuing to find high level competition, right? Out here in Arizona, there is some high level competition. So it's within that, it's pretty cool that we've been able to still train whenever I want to, but along that line, it's been an awesome opportunity to move to Arizona, check out a new place, still train, have this coaching job, be able to mentor the youth and see that in that reflection, be able to connect to, you know, helping where I would have liked the help at that age. Have you ever heard of the word generativity?
Yes.
Yeah. So kind of a generative lens. You know, I maybe at times in my life, I've been the victim to my situation, which is really rough life living on the coast of California. Right. But within that, whatever it is, we all have our melodramas. I think that has really helped me to get my feet back under me and see the blessings that I do have, was to be able to see it through the eyes of others and pass along the things that have shaped me, that have changed my life, that have been my, you know, anything from shortcomings, insecurities, difficulties, and be able to see them and provide like context to people. So that has been wonderful in terms of the coaching opportunity out there and potential opportunity after this Arizona trip to take Stealth. And we've been talking about potentially going and making it more of a nationwide brand and working together in that, and maybe moving along and setting something up in a Colorado or a Montana, somewhere in a different state, and being able to obviously do a very good thing with that, but also see a different shade of life.
And for you, how much of an adjustment was it being able to, I guess, articulate your goals and strategies to others as a coach, as opposed to knowing what you need to work on yourself to improve or to get better?
Good question. Really good question. It's interesting. I was just feeling into this one too. And it's like, if I want to have to coach myself, right? it's one of those things where I feel like a lot of the drills that I work on is you see through the lens, you see how players play through the lens of what you've gone through, what you've been exposed to, and the things that you see as your own weaknesses or growth edges, correct? Like if I see, oh, she's always under the ball, that's because I'm looking through a lens, right, of her, of what I've worked through and how I've dealt with things. So it's easier to coach, right, and tell somebody how to do it as opposed to go through it yourself, and to expose that. So there are some things that I've put in work on, and I know, like, different things like vision of the court, better shot placement. Let's see, more patience defensively, rings rolling over in San Diego of like all the times where I'd be moving on defense, stop, still, balance, neutral, stop, still, balance, neutral. I talked all over and over. If any of my buddies from UCSC are going to listen to this, they'll be laughing their asses off right now. But wherever we were, sorry, sometimes my mind drifts a little bit, but with the coaching, with the players, just to see that. And now I'm kind of back into a spot in my life where I'm feeling kind of empowered, back to that spot that I was when I was just starting my career, and it's kind of gone in a cycle because I had a couple of years that were really difficult for me on the court of trying to get to that next level. And by exposing all those weaknesses, you come to only see the weaknesses in yourself, and it doesn't make for a very fulfilled, joyful life when you're always just trying to fix something that you think is wrong, right? So now that I'm kind of gone through that darkness and being able to see all these things that I really could work on and have the power to like want to go after those and see what I've coached kids in and the drills that I know can make me a better player, it's cool to be able to take all of this as like an accumulated, like conglomeration of the next level, the next step. So it's pretty amazing to see it that way.
As part of the pandemic, you know, when play halted, as we talked about, you kind of packed up and left. Did you have Arizona as an end game in mind, or did you just kind of land here and then find the opportunity?
0%. I had, let's see. So I'm sitting, take you back. What is it? Middle of April, Easter Sunday. My car had just gotten stolen. Yep. And it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, but I'm just sitting in there. I'm just like, you know, I'd been penned up with my old buddy, Ian Castellana from UCI, the Anteater Zot. And we had just been hanging for whatever it had been like the last couple of months. And it kind of just got to this, came to a head where I was like, okay, I got to figure out a way, like, this life can't be this, stuck in the system of how close I am to the fringes. How can I creatively find a way to make money and be more remote and be more free, right, within it? So I'm starting to kind of creatively think, okay, what can I do? I'm a volleyball coach, this and that. Okay, I could coach online. So I started to do some online coaching. Cool. Okay, I'm making whatever, $50 for 2 hours of work. That's probably not going to give me much bread for too long. Okay, what's the next step? Okay, I could go on a clinic series. Cool, I could shoot out. So I ended up sending out a message saying, hey, I want to do some clinics in some of the states that are open outside of California. Who would be interested? And immediately got like an inflow of like abundance where people were like, come here, stay on my couch. Come here, come there. Yada, yada. So I decided that I was going to take my Subaru out back. I was going to hop in. I was going to make the back into a bed and just kind of take a minimal amount of stuff. And I was going to shoot through Arizona, Colorado, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, back through Arkansas. I was going to go through a full three-month summer trip, make money along the way, adventure, and just have a grand old time. That was my original plan. And it got obviously, I could have gone on this journey and I was planning to, and I had it all set up with clinics and it was still growing at the time. And then I had a call from the AVP. There was actually an AVP tour. They had three events that happened this year in Long Beach. So it was like right before I was shooting off of this and I had committed to it, I had a decision to make. Am I going to continue with it and just go on this coaching absolute adventure or on limited reps? Am I going to loop back and play in this awesome opportunity? We were in the top, to be able to do so. I believe we were in the top, I don't know what it was, how many teams were in it? I don't know, 20 teams or something like that, maybe less, maybe 16. I don't remember exactly. So we were in that. So I ended up cutting short that journey, but I had gotten through Arizona and Colorado And that was when I met Brett O'Keefe in Stealth Beach Volleyball. When I went through Arizona, I met just kind of my heart. I felt like a heart connection immediately. They were super supportive to me, like, you know, in a time where I was financially struggling too. He was super generous and gave me opportunity to coach a bunch of privates, and everyone was hungry and super, you know, it felt uplifting. It felt uplifting, and I felt a sense of purpose working with them and hosting clinics. And God, that's a good experience. So on my way back, I stopped in again, and we kind of talked about the fact, like, do you see a future here? Maybe, but it was all kind of like, it was just spitballing. It wasn't really anything at the time. 2 weeks later, I got home and I was still kind of like, okay, what am I doing? I'm training for this AVP. And I got a call from Brett saying, hey, we want to give you this offer. We want you to come out here. We want you to be a part of the Stealth brand. And, you know, they were willing to put their money where their mouth was in terms of getting me out here and getting me set up. It immediately felt like a really cool opportunity. So that's how that happened. It was actually what started as just like this absolute freedom mission has me a little bit more rooted in Arizona, but I'm grateful. Who knows? Maybe I'd be in the Mississippi River right now.
In the river?
Yeah. Hopefully floating happily, but and not at the bottom of it. You feel me? It's all good. Life's good.
Yeah. I know that, in recent times you've done some writing too on a blog. Is that something that's been kind of therapeutic for you to express yourself in that way?
Totally. Yeah. I love, obviously, as you can tell, like I, you know, I don't even know your name. I'm joking. Jeff. It's Jeff. I like to talk. I like to communicate. So that has been an awesome point of expression. And that was actually part of my dream is to have a, you know, I think everybody's leaning towards having a van and disappearing, but having some kind of form of transportation that's like homey and home on wheels, and to be able to like write and blog and express in some way or another. The blog has just been kind of a starting point for me to be like, oh, that'd be really cool to be able to, you know, make a living, a career out of something in writing. So that was just kind of the start of that, and also an opportunity to express and kind of be vulnerable and shed the layer and be transparent to what I've been going through and the tough stuff. And then also intend to empower that kind of vulnerability and empower that realness and that the, you know, the ebb and flow, light and dark, yin and yang, c'est la vie.
And you were a communication major at UC San Diego and a business minor. So you've got the spoken word down, you've got the written word down.
There
you
go.
Now you tell us that working with Stealth, you may want to expand into Colorado. So maybe that's putting the business minor to use, huh?
There we go. Exactly. No, I appreciate, gosh, I don't know if you can hear those dings. I got apps flying at me right now.
all those likes on social ding, media,
ding,
I suppose.
Ding, ding. Yeah, everyone's like, oh my God. Yeah. Chase Frischman, who knows where he is? Maybe he's lost. Is he alive? Is he all right? Okay, we're good. We're back. Business, Stealth, opportunity, amazing. Yes, it would be pretty cool to be able to, I would love that opportunity to be able to travel and help out. Yeah, it's just a win-win-win in all regard. Put to use. Sometimes I've run from the fact that the success I've gotten in the volleyball world and felt like that was like an egoic way to like put myself forth, as opposed to use that spotlight or use that opportunity to be the person that I want to be or how I want to connect with others and be the change in the world, you know? So that's a cool opportunity to be able to be that meals on wheels, because people know me in the volleyball world, and to connect to that and spread some joy and be able to see different environments nationwide. And who knows, you never know worldwide.
Chase Frischman, our guest on this week's Triton Cast. When you were a youngster, you're a two-time gold winner at the Junior Olympics. What in the world was that like?
What in the world? Well, 14 years old.
Wow.
God. I mean, 18. Am I allowed to say this on air?
Yes. I don't know what you're about to say, but yes.
No, it's good. It's good. Yeah, it's good. I'll say 18, I barely had a pube. So in terms of being underdeveloped, an old soul, we'll call it an old soul, young spirit, just baby face. Literally my senior year, I looked like I was 12 years old. And once again, my teammates are probably laughing. I'm picturing my buddy Fred right now, call, because everyone on the team used to call me Baby Chase when I was younger, when I was a freshman or sophomore at UCSD, because I literally looked like I could have been somebody's like, somebody's younger brother showed up to the game who's 15, you know, when I was 20, when I was 21, always was a few steps behind in that. So how was my experience when I was playing gold medals? I was this little munchkin that was just absolutely all heart, all passion, trying to get every single ball up. Like, that was what I had to do. That was who I was. That was my brand. That was like, there was no other way for me to compete when I was 14, to be like 5 foot, 93 pounds soaking wet. So that was kind of where my passion grew from, or who I was as a kid, just try hard, get everything I could. And that was fun. I'm sure it felt like I was king of the world. I don't really remember it, but I'm sure I felt like, oh my God, like this is life, and this is what it feels like to succeed. So that's pretty cool. I really don't remember it very well. 18, I was a little bit taller and lankier, but still looked like I was a kindergartner. So we're good.
Do you still have the medals somewhere?
I'm sure stowed away somewhere, or, you know, maybe my dad looks at it every day.
Every day. Wow. I know you played soccer into high school for a time. Was that a tough decision at some point to give up the soccer and focus solely on the volleyball?
That's cool. I didn't know you knew that. That's cool. So I did play soccer. I played until I was 16, and I loved the sport, but I saw a bunch of injuries in the sport, like ankles twisted on backwards and just some kind of gnarly stuff that during that time, like when it kind of got to a spot where it was like, okay, do I want to continue soccer? I started to not play with my same aggression, like that fire. So that became like when it's like, we got to look at this, where I was talking to my parents, where it's like, okay, you're not really playing with that same vigor that you used to play with. Is it worth it? Because I was kind of playing to protect myself for my volleyball career, for the, you know, volleyball season that would be around the corner. So that's when I bowed out. Was it tough? Yeah, I kind of missed soccer. It was a lot of running. I was probably in better shape back then, you know, amazing shape when you're playing soccer and running the whole length of the field, like your life depends on it.
And going back to when you were a freshman at UC San Diego, so it would have been 2010, I think. You said at that time or thereabouts that your career goals were to play professionally in Europe, check, get into coaching, check, and get into sports broadcasting. Have you dabbled there?
Wow. I said that, didn't I? Okay.
Apparently I wasn't there, cool. But I'm just reading what I see.
That's cool. No, I didn't know that I said that I was going to be playing. Maybe I thought of the overseas thing. Now I'm relating to, what was the middle one? What did you say for that one?
Getting into coaching.
Oh, getting into coaching. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that I had any these big dreams of coaching. Let's see, when I was 18, I guess I started coaching when I was 18 down at that same Victoria Beach, kind of doing youth clinics. And that was a way that during the summer we'd have a blast doing that. That was so fun. And then the last one, the sports broadcasting. Cool. Yeah. I think that was through a lens that I'd grown up, just my whole life was kind of inundated by sports. So now when I talk to kids or I mentor, or I like, you know, communicate, not trying to project all of mine, but I like to open up their eyes to having balance and not being like volleyball, 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 and understanding that, you know, that can result in burnout, and to be able to have different things, different passions, social interests, hobbies, creative outlets. So for me, actually back then, that's why I lose back to sports broadcasting. I felt like sports is my life. So I was like, oh God, how cool would that be to be able to travel around the country and be able to talk about sports? God, that would be so amazing. So that was kind of my childlike dream, and still would be cool, but it's, you know, along the lines of the communication and the journalism and stuff like that. Who knows, maybe down the line it'll be there, but it doesn't feel like it felt like it was a little bit from a lens of like just sports until you drop, you know.
We're in our final moments with Chase Frischman on Triton Cast. If we want to follow your adventures or your exploits or what's coming next, what's the best way to keep up with you?
Let's see. God, I've got a few Instagram handles. One's @ChaseFrischVolley, which is mostly the volleyball stuff. but I do add some stuff, some flavors of my, you know, what goes on in the rest of my life. Let's see what else. So the other one is at Visceral Vesica, but I haven't really put much energy into that one. So we'll see, maybe that one will take off. That's more for the writing and stuff like that on the journey of the blog. My blog is Reasonably Radical Space. And we'll obviously put this in something that you'll be able to see all of it, but it's Reasonably Radical Space, and all of it's attached to my, like, on my social media accounts. You can find all that stuff. Those are just the only ones that I'm really on. Facebook, that's my name, Chase Frischman. Other than that, not really into the tweeting.
Not yet. Maybe one day.
Never know. Another place for me to communicate, Jeff.
That's right. Well, Chase, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me on. And I just want to shout out to, if there's anyone that has made it this far, no, from the staff at UCSD for the 4 years that I've had there, and continued success to them, and all of the alumni and some of my buddies that we had shared some amazing experiences. I'm always here for you. I love you guys, and want to see you guys soon and see you guys succeed in the world and keep on crushing. All love.
Wow, so great to hear about Chase's journey and all that he's done. I mean, it's really cool that he's had such support from his hometown and the beach volleyball community in Laguna Beach.
No question, Jenny. Certainly one of the more fascinating conversations we've had thus far on TritonCast. I think for me, hearing about the differences between beach volleyball that he plays now on the AVP Tour and the indoor game in Switzerland and, of course, in UC San Diego, you know, they really are different sports, but I think I didn't quite make the connection until he explained it so eloquently. But he, of course, as you alluded to, he grew up on the beach. So he grew up playing beach and had to convert to indoor when he came to college.
Yeah, absolutely. So interesting just getting to hear his inside perspective. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit and campus shut down in March, the Office of the Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs had to pivot to a new model of engaging with students. Over the summer, Dr. Eben A. Williams was hired into a new role to oversee virtual experience and peer engagement initiatives. In today's Triton Spotlight, Dr. Williams tells us about how the VCSA office is keeping students engaged while many of us are apart. Jeff?
Dr. Williams, we'll start with your office and how you support students while they are not physically on campus.
Well, that's a great question. I have an inaugural role as the Director of Virtual Experience and Peer Engagement Initiatives. And what that has allowed us to do is really think about how we can be creative at meeting our students where they are, right? Some are on campus, some are not on campus. And even if you're on campus, you're in your own room for the most part, except for some of our graduates. So we create community in that space. So we've looked at a couple of different things. So we're doing Triton Tools and Tidbits, which is a podcast similar to your own in the sense of reaching out to students and hopefully giving them a different perspective on the resources and the work that is happening on campus to support them, right? We're aware of some of the stresses of college. They're the same no matter what year you came. How do you find friends? How do you find resources? How do you get answers? I didn't get that one class that I wanted. What is my career options on the other side? How do I start getting ready for that, right? Those are all the kind of things that we're looking at. I've also just launched Triton Community Connection, which is engaging our alumni, staff, and faculty in reaching out to our students and just checking in, saying, how are you? Allowing for UCSD to be proactive and not be in an assumption space, right? Get hardcore data on what's going on for our students and what's working, what's not working. Those are just a few of the things that we're working on, but those are some of the most exciting things.
You mentioned that your position is new, and obviously the pandemic and all of us being remote and having to scramble when it first hit, it's not something there was a playbook for. There's not something that, right, that we've had to work with in the past. So how did you formulate a plan to figure out how to keep students engaged and connected? Trial and error?
Great. Yeah, well, a little bit. What is a kept secret for people who don't know me, I have a PhD in chemical engineering. I also have done leadership development for 10 years and have a coaching certification, but I've been the inaugural director of at least three or four programs at UCSD, I really have fun inventing and creating sustainable practices that support our students. And so this falls right into that space or spectrum. So some of it is trial and error, and then some of it is just, there's things you just know, right? So I've taught at UCSD intro and capstone courses, and like I said, directed programs. So some of it is trial and error. A lot of it is listening and just pulling the pieces together. What chemical engineers are large-scale system processors. And so for me, I've been able to apply what I learned as a chemical engineer to this crazy world called humanity, where we don't have clear predictors of what people are going to do, but we do our best, right? And with chemical engineering, we're doing Mother Nature. No one gets 100% efficiency with Mother Nature. So in that way, being comfortable with ambiguity while making decisions has been a great resource. So you listen to and you collect data. So conversations with students, listening to what's going on and seeing where there may be alignments for efficiency, or sometimes it's not efficient. It's just what needs to happen. And then we're collecting data to see what works, right? So I'm learning new things all the time from everyone.
And you're a part of student affairs. And so how do you collectively within student affairs determine whether some of these initiatives are quote unquote successful or worth repeating?
That is a great question. I think, you know, you go with some of the base information. With a podcast, you can see how many people open it. With an event, you can see how many people attend, how many people come back, how many people click on your website, right? There's just data we can collect. Some of it has post surveys, right? How did that go for you? Did you get what you needed? And then other of it is gut and then listening to students. I don't know a meeting I'm in where I don't have an ASGSA or spaces representative in. We just started something in collaboration with the two ABCs in student affairs, Patty and Maruth, to do a student leadership alliance. And the goal there is to be able to make sure that we are reaching deeper into the stronghold of leadership to understand the diversity of our students and what do they need, right? What are they looking for? And what are they creating? Some of the best resources on our campus, separate from, you know, our staff and faculty, are our students. They are right there. They know what works for them, what doesn't work. And so having direct access to that works as well. So I think, you know, it's a combination. We've gotten real clear feedback that everyone's over emailed. I know you may be able to connect with that. I know I definitely can connect with that.
Question.
So then it's like, what are the other methods, right? So social media, we do a town hall right now for students. We also have been doing them for parents in three different languages. But the student town hall, someone just suggested that we hold it on Instagram or YouTube Live. Now, logistically, I have no clue how that's going to work or if it's possible, but what an amazing idea to try to figure out, right? And if it's going to reach more students, why not?
So it's almost a listen to the students and go where they are. Is that the mindset?
I think that's a huge part of the mindset. But student affairs and the whole practice of the university, we're professionals who our goal is to make efficiencies, right? So you pull a little bit from your practice, right? So I've taught classes, I've ran programs. So you pull a little bit from what you know just works. It's customer discovery and customer service, right? And so what does it look like to be a customer service type space? And I don't see students as just our customer, but they're definitely people who we would like to make sure are having a great experience and are successful. But they're also our partners, right? So it's a combined approach. Does that make sense?
It does. It's a lot to try to juggle. It's a lot of different moving pieces, but it does make sense. You mentioned the podcast earlier, Triton Tools and Tidbits, that your office has put together. Tell us how that came about and what's the goal in reaching students there.
So yeah, thanks for asking about Triton Tools and Tidbits. What's exciting about it is it's a collaboration. I think there's about eight of us that come together to talk about what topics could come on there. But it came out of the fact that we went remote unexpectedly. Almost all of us didn't know it was coming, right? And then all of a sudden we were at home. Like, okay. And we're like, how do we get information to students to let them know opportunities are happening. You know, we've always had email, we've always had orientation and programming, and the people who do those programs do a phenomenal job. But we've also always relied on like running into a student, right? And like, oh, hey, how you doing? Oh, did you know about that, right? Posters, being able to know they gather at this spot or that spot. Well, we don't have gathering and we don't have random running into collision moments where you can share information. So we were like, why not a podcast where we can have students with our staff and faculty talk about different topics that we think are pertinent to their success and resources that would be helpful in making the experience more interesting, more fun, and helping them reach their goals, whatever those goals are at UCSD.
And of course, we in athletics are a part of student affairs. How can athletics play a role on fostering a positive student experience here at UC San Diego, even though, as we all know, obviously there's no games and competition taking place right now?
Well, I think, one, you guys are doing a great job already. I know of several initiatives that you're already doing. I think keeping up our Triton Pride. I just was with King Triton doing a video talking about staying 6 feet apart with our Triton health ambassadors.
Love that.
I think one of the great things that I even picked up from being and I didn't play sports in college, though everyone thought I was going to walk on. But sports really helped define some of the best leadership lessons of my life. Right. And so seeing our athletes with those skill sets of competition, goal driven and partner collaboration, I think as long as they continue to integrate into the campus, that'd be great. In athletics, I think you guys do a great job of creating energy and events that just speak to the culture and values that we'd like to have at UCSD and continue to foster at UCSD. I'm working with athletics to be a part of the Triton Community Connection. They're one of the first partners to sign up. And then we're looking at how else can we support our students through alumni engagement. So I'm excited.
You mentioned earlier that your current role, Director of Virtual Experience and Peer Engagement Initiatives, is something that came about over the summer in July. Prior to that, you were the Executive Director with the Gordon Engineering Leadership Center for 10 years here on campus. What did that entail?
Oh my gosh, that was so much fun. I believe, you know, I was creating ambassadors for the field of engineering. We have such a bad reputation of not being people. And I will just make you laugh. And I think I hope that other people will appreciate it. You know, people used to meet me and say, you're not an engineer. And I just was highly offended. You know, I'm a woman, which is a small population of engineer. And then I know you can't tell on this podcast. Maybe you can tell by the swagger of my voice, but I'm a Black woman. Right. And that number isn't that high in engineering either. And so I used to think they were just being rude. Right. And then finally, I was like, stop being offended and ask, well, why do you say that? And they're like, well, because you look people in the eye, right? And I was like, what? That's why you think I'm not an engineer?
Wow.
Because I'm comfortable with people. And then I'd hear people say things about my fellow engineers, and a lot of my friends were engineers, and I didn't find that the rumors were true. And so it was, the job was a point of pride. I was teaching leadership to people who were already highly driven and giving them the skills to build teams. Some of their teams became 40 and 50 people deep. They were winning competitions amongst professionals. They were winning grants. Some of them have started companies. They were just an impressive group of individuals. So, you know, I bring my leadership development and creativity to the job every day, right?
And last question, you've been here at UC San Diego since 2004. Why is this such a special place for you?
You know, I think the reason I love UCSD and UCSD has kept me is the ability to pivot and innovate, right? There's definitely places where I'd love to see more streamlined processes across our campus because we're a huge campus. But in general, you really have some space to do creative things, try things out. That trial and error is really possible here. And if it works, it continues to expand, right? And I've seen some of the programs, though I'm not director, still exist, right? Some of the things that I put in place still happen. Some of the orgs that I helped initial leadership get started with are still functioning with those values. So UCSD has been a place for innovation, and we have some of the smartest students here, right? And with a little bit of secret sauce, I think they go a long way, right? And that secret sauce comes from all different places on this campus, not uniquely me at all, but, you know, it's fun to be a part of that.
Dr. Ebony Williams, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
What a massive undertaking by the Student Affairs Office. And it's so great to see how some of the virtual initiatives spearheaded by Dr. Williams have already made quite an impact. If you want to check out the Triton Tools and Tidbits podcast or learn more about the UC San Diego Student Affairs, check out vcsa.ucsd.edu.
Coming up on episode 20 of TritonCast next week, we'll meet Shruti Kamath, a women's rowing alum who graduated in 2016, a native of India. Shruti tells us how she got to UC San Diego and found her passion for rowing. And how did that ultimately lead her to join the Navy? Come back and join us next week to find out. New episodes of TritonCast premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's show. Whether you found us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or anywhere else, we're so glad that you joined us today. And if you like what you heard, make sure that you subscribe, rate, and give us a brief review. For more on TritonCast, give us a follow on Twitter at TritonCast. And if you've got suggestions for a future guest, feel free to send us a tweet or email Jeff and I at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. We'll see you back here next week.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter at TritonCast.